Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good middle of the night, and welcome back to Cases of Color. Y'all have really showed up and showed out for me. Like, y'all, I have gotten so many followers on Instagram in the past week. It is insane. I went from 520 followers to literally, I'm almost at 1,000 followers. I might even be at 1,000 followers by the time this comes out. But I say all this to say, it's not about the numbers, but I am glad that more people are listening to the podcast, that more people are hearing these stories, and they are seeing how important this work is and how important it is that they listen to Black voices when it comes to the true crime genre. You know, the true crime genre is very white saturated. It is not full of a lot of Black voices. And unfortunately, I think because of that, we hear about these cases that are more high profile, that have white victims, that have white perpetrators. And we not so often hear about stories that are just as vital and just as important. And the difference in a lot of these stories is that a lot of the stories that we talk about that involve Black people and people of color and Indigenous people are unsolved. They got maybe one night on the news and that was it. So for all my new people who are here, thank you. I'm glad that you're here. I'm glad that you're listening. Continue to listen, but also continue to do the work to share these stories, to sign the petitions, to get the information out and things like that. Once I hit 1,000 followers on Instagram, I'm going to do an Instagram live. I'm not sure what day or time I'm going to do it. So if you are not following Cases of Color on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook, please, please, please go ahead and follow now so that when I do post when I'm going to be coming out and doing the live kind of Q&A case updates, that you guys will be able to watch it. I'm going to try to do it for about an hour. I think that would be fun, just like an hour on live talking to you guys, answering your questions, taking case suggestions, giving case updates, telling you all a little bit more about myself, and just kind of enjoying some quote unquote one-on-one time with everybody who's followed me, old and new. And to all my people who've been rocking with me from the jump, I want to say thank you. None of this success becomes possible without you all. So I am very grateful to you all and I thank you so much. And on that note, I'm getting very long-winded with this, so I am going to cut this off and move on. But the case I'm going to talk about today is the case of Vanessa Honey Malone. And this case happened in 2012. It was listed as a cold case until about 2 months ago. Now, Honey Malone's case has been on my list since last year as a case to cover because it was really important to me that this case resurfaced and that we get some answers, because in my opinion, there were just too many people who could have known something for this case to still be cold. And fortunately, 2 months ago, there was a break in the case. So we're going to talk about that, because at this time, no one has gone to court. No justice technically has been served for her family, and they don't even really know truly what happened. So I think it's very, very, very important that we still talk about this case, keep it on you all's radar, so y'all can be on the lookout for updates and things of that nature. So with all of that said, let's get into the case of Vanessa Honey Malone. Vanessa Honey Malone, affectionately called Honey by her friends and family, because as her mom, Flora, said when she was younger, she said that her name was just too plain, that Vanessa was just too boring, and she needed a better name. So everybody called her Honey. It's just a name that she came up with for herself, and everyone called her that. Her mom, her siblings, her friends, anyone that knew her called her Honey. She was 18 years old at the time of her death, and she was deeply loved by her mother who raised her. And she also was very close to her older sister, Cassandra, as well. Cassandra describes Honey as being like her first baby and, you know, the first person she loved and cared about. it was very clear that they had a very close sibling bond. And her mom described her as being one of the sweetest girls that you would ever meet. Just super kind, super loving, and things of that nature. So all in all, Honey was just a very sweet person, very kind, very friendly girl. And because she was so friendly, because she was so kind, she had a lot of friends. And some of her friends were not really the best people to be around. It was said that some of the company that she kept were involved with dealing drugs and other illegal activities. And it was really troubling to Honey's mother, Flora, and her sister, Cassandra. She hung out with older men as well, and they were known for their criminal backgrounds. They went by various aliases, such as Spoon and Mercy were two of the main people who she hung around. And they just weren't who you would want your younger daughter hanging around. So on the evening of October 23rd, 2012, Honey got off work and she came home like she always did. And her mother says that she got a text message from a friend, and she went and spoke to her mother and told her that she was going to go out. Like, she would be leaving the house, but she'd come back. You know, her mother admitted to not knowing where Honey was going at the time, but she also notes that about 2 to 3 minutes after Honey left the house, she actually came back in the house to tell her mother that she loved her and that she would be right back. But Honey never came back that night. After Honey left the house, Honey's mother called her just to check on her and see if she was okay. And Honey's phone went straight to voicemail and she did not answer. And it really concerned Honey's mother because she just was like, you know, what is going on? And she called Cassandra, the older sister, and she tried to relax because she's like, you know, maybe her phone died or whatever. But then she heard some emergency vehicles going by and headed in the direction that Honey went. And that caused her to be a lot more concerned. And she got a knock at the door from Honey's friend, and he was saying that something had happened to Honey. Flora and Cassandra left their house and headed to that apartment complex, but it literally took them about 3 hours before anyone confirmed that Honey was the victim of a crime. The police believe that Honey walked in on some type of home invasion or drug deal gone bad. They couldn't really say which was which, but that it was either or. Either it was a home invasion or a drug deal that went bad and that she was not supposed to be there. Her friends, and I use that word very loosely, that were in the apartment at the time claimed that between 3 to 6 men came into the apartment with guns, that they had kicked in the door, and they said that they were beaten and tied up and put in the shower, that they were bound with belts and electric cords and put in the shower that was in the back of the apartment. They then said that shortly after that, they heard gunshots. After they heard the gunshots, they allegedly tried to untie themselves. And those gunshots were the ones that killed Honey. So Honey was shot 2 times, once in the back and once in the chest, right through her heart. After she was shot towards the front of the apartment, her body was dragged through the apartment into the master bedroom in the apartment and put into the closet. And the way she was put into the closet, her legs were kind of hanging out of the closet, but she was dragged all the way through the apartment from front to back to be placed in the closet, and she was left for dead. And the shot to the heart, honestly, is what killed Honey. The police believe that the reason that they killed Honey is because she probably saw more than she should have, or in my opinion, I believe that Honey may have known the person who did the robbery. And that's why they killed her, so that she would not tell on them for what they did. And I say that because why kill her and not kill the other people in the house? Like, why would you kill her and not kill the other people in the house? Because if you think about it, right, I'm thinking that she was possibly a liability to whoever broke in the house. And the reason why I say that is because if you think about it, if this break-in story is true, if the person was so recognizable that Honey would know who they were and that's why they killed her, then why would they not kill the other two people? Like, there's something about that is just not sitting right with me. Something about it just doesn't make any sense. And that's why I wanted to cover this story, because the story given to the police, in my opinion, just does not seem plausible. It just, it's never, ever sat right with me. And the apartment that Honey was murdered in was known for having heavy foot traffic due to drugs and other things that were being sold out of there. And it was later confirmed that it actually was a dope house. And it's where they sold things like cocaine and marijuana. So I just, whoever broke into that house, if they knew that things were there, they would have to have known about it, which means the people who they were stealing from probably knew them. So them killing Honey because Honey saw them versus killing the two people who they decided to quote unquote tie up, it just doesn't make any sense. Some other weird facts about this case to me is there was a huge footprint on the door. Like if you look at crime scene photos, there's a humongous footprint on the door, clearly from an Air Force One. It's very easy to distinguish. I don't see how anyone would have missed it. Why would Honey, an 18-year-old girl, walk into a house with a clear kicked-in door? Because if you look at the photos, also clear that the door was kicked in while it was still locked, with a clear kicked-in door and a huge-ass footprint on the door. Why would she do that? Like, why would she say, oh, let me just come in here? Like, I don't see that happening. And oddly enough, I didn't believe that. And I saw a clip where her mom said the same thing, where she's like, why would she walk in on something like that if she saw a door kicked in. And also, Honey didn't drive. She walked everywhere that she went, which I used to live in Georgia. That's not uncommon. I think I walked everywhere. And even when I lived in Dallas, when I was younger, I walked everywhere. Like everywhere we just walked. And it's crazy because like when I go back home now and I drive from like one place to another and I'm like, man, I used to walk here. Me thinking about walking that distance now makes my legs hurt just thinking about it. So it's not improbable, you know, her walking around. But what's weird is that her cell phone was found half a mile away from where she was killed. And when the police officer was asked about, you know, why that was possible, he said, well, I think it was stolen because it was easy to sell on the streets. But my thing, if that's the case, why was it left somewhere until it died? Like, if that's the reason why it was taken. And something that I found out later in my research is that the only thing that was taken from that house was a cell phone, which was Honey's cell phone. That's it. Nothing else was taken from the house. Not one thing. So what was that about? And what did Honey know or not know? Why was she a target? Because this seems like a setup. This doesn't seem like something probable to me. And the fact that these people were running a dope house, but they just hid in the bathroom this whole time and were willingly tied up. Something just doesn't make any sense to me. It's honestly a very unbelievable story. I really wish that someone would come out and say what actually happened to Honey, because it's very clear that whatever happened to her was very unsat and it had to have been planned. An update to this case is there was finally a break about 2 months ago, like I told you guys, and they finally made an arrest and they arrested a man named Donald Ash. But guess what Donald Ash's alias is? Mercy. Someone that I mentioned in the beginning that Honey hung out with frequently. Is this not a trip, y'all? He was arrested in Stone Mountain at his mother's home. He was charged with second-degree murder, giving false statements, and tampering with evidence. Now, the police department has been very close-lipped about the way that they caught him. They've been very quiet about the details on why he was charged with what he's charged with. And I know some people are frustrated by that. I think it's to keep other people from fleeing, like anybody else who was involved. I am guessing, even though what he did was wrong, if he wasn't the direct shooter, they're probably going to offer him a plea deal to give up what happened and to speak on what actually occurred. Again, I'm not a fan of that because I feel like if you are an active participant in a crime, I feel like it really shouldn't matter what new information you come out with or what new development you come out with. I feel like you are still guilty and it really shouldn't matter how you help out. But I know that that's how they get more people jammed up in these situations and, you know, they're able to fully figure out what happened, establish a clear motive and things like that. So some ways that Honey's family really pursued this case is Honey's mother has been very vocal about getting justice for her child. CSI Atlanta, which it's actually pretty cool. I did not know that Atlanta was one of the few places in the country that has a news station like specifically for their crime scene investigators. And something that CSI Atlanta had a big part in was cold case and evidence extraction. So extracting evidence after the fact, like after something has happened. I thought that was super duper cool. I'd never like heard of that or been aware of that. So I thought that was really, 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 really cool how they went on about that. And CSI Atlanta even accompanied the mother and the sister on the Dr. Oz show, which took the case national. And I'm glad that her family relentlessly pursued this case. And I will say this, I know that every family does not have the means to do so. And I know that every family doesn't even get the attention that they deserve when it comes to these type of things. But I am very glad that fortunately they had the opportunities to do this. I feel like that played a role in them finally getting a break in the case. And it's very frustrating to me that this young girl was murdered by someone who she knew, or clearly he has some type of involvement in the murder. Again, I do not believe that this was actually a robbery. I think this might have been a setup. Maybe she knew more than they wanted her to know or something of that nature. But nevertheless, I really feel like this was targeted to kill Honey, because she came home, she got a text, and then she immediately just left after that. I feel like they lured her there, and not that she had never been there before, but it just seems very like the timing. You know what I mean? The timing of it just doesn't sit right with me, and it never has. So I am hoping and praying that now that this man is locked up and he's clearly being charged with murder, with lying, and with tampering with evidence. Because if I'm not mistaken, he was one of the people who was left at the apartment, like tied up at the apartment. Don't get me wrong here. I don't want to misquote, because it was kind of not clear who was who. And I know some names they completely left out altogether. But I think he was one of the people who was at the apartment. So I'm thinking that if he was there and he was saying like, oh, we got tied up, and now they're charging him with murder, false statements, and tampering with evidence, clearly there's a totally different motive. And something that her mother also brought up is the 911 call. And how the family has never heard the 911 call that was made to police to let them know what had happened. I would be interested to hear it as well. I wonder why, like, even Dr. Oz wasn't able to get a hold of it either. So I'm really wondering why that might be and what it might indicate, who was on that 911 call, who made it. Was it the unnamed woman that was in the house? Was it Mercy who made the call? It's so many questions. So yeah, this is just a heartbreaking case, and something that I want to touch on two things. Number one, hearing her mother say that, I'm just glad that I'm alive to see this happen, it really broke my heart, because you have to remember, you know, these people, these victims, they are all valuable to someone, whether it be as a mom, as a sister, as an auntie, as an uncle, as a cousin. Like, everybody has a role. As a father, everybody has a role in someone's life they play, and they're valuable. And it brings me to my next point. If you watch the Crime Watch Daily videos and you see Sergeant Lynn Schuler, he made a comment that really bothered me. Like, it bothered me so much that I wrote it down. And he said, when you hang out with people like that, you can get taken out. And he said it so, like, nonchalant and just very, like, yeah, whatever, you know, casualty of war type of thing. And it really pissed me off, and I'm going to tell you why. I really don't like this narrative or the insinuation that you might deserve something that happens to you because you, quote unquote, brought this on. If this narrative is not what these people are trying to say that it was, then clearly there's nothing that this girl could have done. Could she have picked better friends? Sure. Could her mother maybe have been more aware of exactly where she was going? Yes, those are all things that can be said to be true. However, this whole dehumanization of Black girls and Black boys, specifically our children, 18 years old or not, our children, by people who are well into adulthood, is really sickening to me. Because regardless of who she was friends with, she did not deserve to be shot in the back and shot through the heart, and her bloody body dragged through a home into a master bedroom closet and thrown on top of dirty clothes and left there to literally bleed out to death. That is not something that she deserved. And it's probably not something that she could have predicted, because if she would have known, she probably wouldn't have went. But what we are not going to do is dehumanize Black girls and boys for making mistakes that we all have made. I'm sure we all at one point in time of our life could have been in a situation that could have ended up bad for us. And by the grace of God, that did not happen to us. We're not going to dehumanize Black children. We're just not. I don't care if she was 18, still a child. We're not doing that. We just won't. We just aren't. At the end of the day, this is someone's daughter who is gone, who will never be here again. And right now the focus needs to be on finding out exactly what happened to Honey, why she was murdered, and getting justice for her mother and her sister and for anyone that loved Honey. This is it, you all, for the Honey Malone case. I hope that you all enjoyed listening to this. I hope you look into it further. As I see updates about the court case and things like that, I will most certainly keep everybody in the loop on what's going on. I definitely want to get better at posting case updates. Also, you guys, some exciting news. In the next month or two, I'm going to be working on creating a Patreon. I expect to have the Patreon up by 1 August. That gives me time to figure out what type of content I want to put on there. But that is a way for you guys to support me. The podcast will always and forever be free. I repeat, the podcast will always be free. And I am not in any way telling people that they are obligated to support me on a Patreon. However, I do want to make sure that anything that I do where it's monetized is something that I as a creator can have control of. I don't want anyone to just be on my platform doing whatever. And most importantly, I want to make sure that if I do ever have sponsors or advertisers, that they're in alignment with pushing the culture forward and they're not out here being culture vultures. And I also say that to say that I will be offering spots to people who are interested, of course, in advertising on the podcast. I do have a pretty good reach out here, and I would love to offer affordable spots to Black-owned, Black woman-owned, people of color, and Indigenous people-owned and operated businesses. So if you know of any, or if you yourself have one, please reach out to me. Again, offering affordable advertisement spots to people who would like to share their business with my platform. Again, I definitely would like to check out your business first, because I'm not just going to be up here talking about toothbrushes and hair ties just for the sake of it. But I want to make sure that people are in alignment with what Cases of Color is about, and that's advancing all of us forward, because there's room for all of us at the table. So again, if you're not following Cases of Color on Instagram and Twitter, you need to do that, especially because we're about to hit 1K on Instagram. And when I do, I'm going to be going live, and I'm really, really, really excited to do that with you guys. Like, I literally cannot wait. So anyways, I say all that to say, I love you guys so much. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. And until next time, goodbye.